I think there's a lot of truth to it. The big winners of climate change are the engineering firms. I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, which talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 71, and I think it's going to be a good one. I'm talking to Bluefield Research Director Greg Goodwin about some recent news in the engineering landscape. More specifically, Jacobs has just announced plans to spin out its critical mission solutions business unit in a quest for, I guess what they say, higher growth, higher margins, and I guess more focused opportunities on its core business units and activities, which includes water in this case. So that has prompted a discussion with Greg, among other things. And so I look forward to having a good conversation with him, which I think you'll find interesting. Particularly as we talk about what we call the gatekeepers of the water industry, engineering firms. But before we do that, I wanted to throw in a couple things. Next month, my colleagues are going to be at ACE 23, the AWWA Water Conference in Toronto. So that takes place from June 11th to June 14th. So this is your opportunity to meet with our team of water experts. There are going to be a number of people from Bluefield there. Even in today's work from home environment, I'm a firm believer that in-person connections are more productive and quite honestly, more fulfilling. So take a chance to meet in person with our team by sending us a note beforehand at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. Just ask the people that we just met with in Sydney, Australia at Oswater or Glasgow, Scotland at the Swan event. So shout out to those conference organizers. Those were great events. We had lots of great meetings on opposite sides of the world. So we look forward to seeing you in Toronto. And then secondly, I hope I'm not getting ahead of ourselves here, but I wanted to give everybody a heads up on some really interesting analysis from our private water research team. With all the news and concerns about aging infrastructure, water quality, and workforce management, let alone the cost of just maintaining approximately 49,000 or so and 49,000 or so water systems, 18,000 or so wastewater systems in the US. Calls for consolidation of utilities are rising. There's a lot of activity in that space. You guys have heard it here before. So we track M&A transactions on a quarterly basis, particularly among the leading IUUs. And we're looking at about 135 on average every utility acquisitions every year. But it's an interesting space, not only among these investor and utilities, but also infrastructure investors as well as regulators. But what's interesting is supported by this transaction data that we've looked at. So we've got, we have almost 2,000 utility acquisitions we've tracked over the last 5 to 10 years, but it's allowed us for a more refined analysis of the total addressable market for water and wastewater utilities, looking at connections, flow rates. So our team has recently resized the total addressable market for infrastructure investors in the water space in the US at about $977 billion. That is, at the current transaction prices, excluding necessary upgrades, rehabs, and everything subsequent to the deal, we're looking at almost $1 trillion of assets out there. We've worked with a number of clients in the space as they've looked at it, but we've done or taken a more refined approach in developing a new methodology and sizing the market. So it's really interesting to see how our team has valued the water wastewater utility market by geography, ownership, violations, by size. So if you're looking to learn more about it, this is all really great stuff for anyone interested in framing the market. For instance, despite all the noise, for good or bad, investor in utilities, that is, companies with dedicated water utility strategies like American Water, Central States, Cal Water, San Jose Water. These guys are active out there in the market. They make up only or approximately 6% of the total connections served in the U.S. It's, you know, I know everybody refers to the 15%, but a lot of that includes like privately owned community systems, smaller systems that are not municipally owned. We're really talking about 6%. So the number is smaller than what everybody sort of throws about. We've used the 15% in the past for obvious reasons, but this analysis should be interesting to anybody looking at consolidation for good or bad. Like I said, in the US utility space. So that research is coming out. So be on the lookout. Look forward to seeing that. I've already seen a draft of the analysis. We've got all the data. We've put it all together for clients. So be on the lookout. So those are two things. So rather than hear me ramble on about what's going on at Bluefield and setting up meetings, that's a hint at ACE. Why don't we bring Greg into the conversation and talk about what's happening in the engineering space? All right. So I'm joined here today by Greg Goodwin. Greg, how are things?
Doing well. How are you, Reese?
I'm pretty good. As we often do on these podcasts, there are certain common discussions that we have is a sort of podcast small talk. It's either about the weather or it's about sports. And so I think both you and I are in Boston and we're lamenting another loss of the Boston Celtics in game one. But hey, that's the way it goes.
But the weather part is positive, though. Exactly. It's May is probably the peak month in Boston, I dare say.
I'd say May and October. But there we go. We're done.
Yep. October's
doubling down there. So, well, thanks for taking the time to share that and keep me honest, at least, despite what happened last night. So let's set the stage a bit. I mean, as many listeners might know, we're continuing looking at, you know, sort of companies doing a little competitive analysis, whether it be across the engineering space, the digital space, the municipal space, et cetera. But engineering companies, there's been some news this past week. Jacobs, Jacobs, one of the leading engineering firms in water specifically, sort of a bit of a 800-pound gorilla, has announced plans to spin out its CMS business, its critical mission solutions business. And so we thought that was of note. It's come up in conversations you've had with clients and other people in the market. So I thought I'd bring you on to talk a little bit about this and maybe provide some guidance or perspective on what's happened and what this might mean going forward. So why don't you set the stage for us?
Sure. Yeah. So kind of as you mentioned, Reeves, it was on May 9th, the announcement came. So CMS is Critical Mission Solutions, which is basically kind of the component of Jacobs that handled most of the federal contracts. So here we're talking about space, national security, nuclear remediation, 5G, things like that. So this was a $4.4 billion revenue generator in 2022 and sort of really kind of focused on those technical services. But the announcement is for Jacobs to spin this off into a separate company entirely. The remaining Jacobs businesses, which were about $10.5 billion last year, will kind of have more of the core focus in consulting, planning, engineering, design, program management. You know, really kind of their water-focused business will remain under sort of the Jacobs name while they spin out CMS into its own sort of separate entity.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's interesting that they're doing that. It sounds like one of the reasons is they're sort of refining the scope. I think, I mean, we'll get into it. There seem to be some tailwinds, but with just real quickly, when do you any idea this is supposed to close? When do you know?
So according to the announcement, this will be the second half of next year of 2024.
So it's going to take a little while. I mean, I was speaking to someone yesterday and I had a quick question. The first comment was, well, they're going to lose, you know, $4 billion of revenue from their business. But yes and no, but there seems to be a reason behind all of this. So why don't we just, you know, I think one of the things is we want to talk a little bit, if only briefly, about there is a sort of a difference between the two businesses. And maybe we can start with laying out the Jacobs business that's going to remain going forward. What does that look like going forward post breakup, so to speak?
Yeah. So the way sort of the Jacobs umbrella is going to be organized is they have their people and places solutions, which is kind of the bulk of the sort of the revenue under the primary business units. It's about 81% of the business. And then they have PA Consulting, which was a recent pickup that they had, I think in 2019, although I might be off a year or two on that, which is about 11%. And then Divergent Solutions, which makes up the remaining 8% of that balance there. So And, you know, kind of, when we look at kind of geographically, between 15 and 20% of the revenues to date have been outside the US when we're looking sort of at that footprint. And when we're looking specifically at water, the water and sewer business is around somewhere between 1.7 and 2 billion in the past year. So quarterly reporting management, you know, kind of looks at the water sector as exceeding expectations, you know, kind of plays into this decision. There are some tailwinds behind all that with recent sort of federal policies. So, you know, it is definitely an outgrowth of some of those decisions. And you know, water is a bright spot, I think, in terms of what's going to be remaining under the umbrella of Jacobs.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, and I sort of in the back of my mind, I'm also thinking about Tetra Tech as well. So in the sense that Tetra Tech also has a big sort of what I would say government business, you know, federal government business. And that's really where CMS kind of plays, right? That $4 billion, you know, comes from. And it seems to be slower moving, longer term, lower margin. So it seems like there's a bit of sort of different businesses. And one, I don't want to say it's pulling it down. It's just a different, the different maturity level. And so therefore, by splitting the two businesses up, it seems that they're basically saying, hey, we've got a higher growth. It's hard to believe that, you know, the water infrastructure sector is higher growth compared to other things, but the reality of it is that case. And therefore, this sort of really benefits shareholders. I mean, if there's the winner of this, then they own two companies that grow at sort of an anticipated rate, but within their own lanes. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's right. The CMS business, I think, was seen as, you know, obviously a stable business unit, but sort of kind of the lower growth margin type of slower moving type of business unit that, to your point there, Reese, that, you know, with this spin out, we do expect to see them kind of focusing on things that are higher growth, higher margin, and be attractive to investors in terms of the share price and so forth. So it's really kind of a move towards some agility, I think, under sort of the Jacobs brand and what will fall under it now. So obviously some implications to that sort of moving forward.
Well, I mean, speaking of implications, what about competitively? Any thoughts or perspective on, you know, you've touched upon a couple of things, why this might be, but also what it might mean going forward?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's something that might be more attractive to certain high-level employees or candidates, you know, the type of talent they're able to attract. Engineering space is really competitive as to boot. So, you know, any sort of edge you can get there is important to moving forward, particularly sort of in a large organization like that. So that's definitely one angle of it that, you know, might be interesting to kind of keep track of moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually a really interesting point about sort of workforce management. You know, obviously the labor market's pretty tight as it is. Engineers demonstrated engineers and experiences harder and harder to find these days. So that space is increasingly competitive, particularly with the given demand on the sector. Like you mentioned, IIJA was one, IRA, the CHIPS Act. When you go through the financials of a lot of these, at least publicly traded engineering firms, they all mention those things as providing strong tailwinds to the market, which it seems like this is clearly a driver to this decision. And then also what's happening in the Western US, right? You know, there's a lot of dollars, it seems to be being deployed or being looked at. I think there was one reuse facility they won recently, which is pretty significant as well. You'd agree with that?
Yeah. So all of that is definitely an element. So, I mean, in Southwest, particularly like say in California, where we see a lot of the larger sort of more prominent water reuse projects. So things related to One Water or Pure Water, $1 billion, $500 million types of projects. Most recently, within the past few weeks, there was one that was awarded to Jacobs. This is the Donald C. Tillman Advanced Water Purification Facility, and this is to shore up sort of supplies for the city of Los Angeles and surrounding area. So it's a $500 million award. It's using the Progressive Design Build contract for sort of procurement. And that's something that we, that's of growing importance, I think, specifically in certain geographies, California probably being the most prominent. There was some legislation passed last year in state to basically expand the number of projects that can be used at the local level using the progressive design build model. I think $5 million is sort of the low end of where it's allowed to be used, but it's definitely, you know, something that's growing there. So yeah, it's definitely those types of projects are fitting into this.
Yeah, I think the design, the progressive design build is something we've looked at recently, one in a research, obviously Kiewit, IDE, and Ridgewood. There's one in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, that they had won recently. There's another one that's moving ahead, I believe, in Portland, Oregon. But then also, I mean, when you just look through, once again, you look at these larger engineering firms, whether it be Jacobs, Tetra Tech, Stantec as well. I think Stantec is working, at least they won one last year, I believe, in Saskatchewan. It was progressive design build as well. So they're all active in that space. It'll be interesting. You and I were talking about this before recording this. That's an area of increasing activity. There's a more favorable environment for that, particularly given with a greater focus on infrastructure, but also finding ways to be more efficient, both in the design, engineering, but also, quite honestly, in the cost. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about, you know, Jacobs in its water position, things that we've seen more recently. You know, we do track these companies, we track, you know, across them, but also see them across a number of different sectors that we're following, whether it be, you know, within the private water space, as we call it, within the digital water space. Any perspective on what they've been up to in that area as well?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we haven't really touched upon as much so far is sort of the O&M space, which, you know, for all sort of the large engineering, you know, projects that we've been talking about, Jacobs does have a quite a large sort of O&M service provision business. They're definitely in the top five in terms of contracts from what we track. So, and you know, we do that continually, and we're going to have a new analysis coming out around O&M players in the coming weeks and so forth. So, you know, you have your Veolia and Infomarks and so forth, but Jacobs is definitely right up there with a large number of contracts overall. And within that space too, you know, I think kind of the digital trends overall are becoming more prominent and important in terms of how EPCs kind of think about M&A. So nearly 20% of acquisitions in the water sector in the last 7 or 8 years have been looking at digital solutions providers in particular. So Jacobs has looked into that across several things. So they have Aqua DNA, Flood Modeler. Digital segment overall is becoming more important. Like I sort of mentioned there, I've seen several sort of SCADA pickups and so forth across these types of companies as well. So there's kind of a, you know, debate, I think, happening internally across some, you know, different EPCs of whether, you know, do we build this in-house? Do we partner with other sort of firms around this? How do we position this? You know, do we acquire sort of the little guy? So there's a lot happening kind of within the digital space. So, you know, Jacobs, AECOM, Black & Veatch, Arcadis, Stantec, Tetra Tech have all sort of looked at distinct positions around digital, and their way that they sort of look at it are sort of around differentiating factors of like product strategies and capabilities. So product versus service offerings, third party versus in-house technologies, and then sort of looking at the portfolio expansioning and positioning. So M&A strategy, internal R&D, sort of spinoffs like we're talking about today, you know, cleaving off, you know, parts of the company that are less, you know, interesting in terms of divestment. And then just kind of the organizational structure overall is, do they do a dedicated digital business? They embedded in some type of cross-functional digital teams across different silos within the organization, or there's definitely different ways to look at it. And it's, you know, a dynamic space that is moving fast. And I think, you know, something that we're going to keep track of certainly when looking at the EPCs.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting area. And I, you know, there are different business models, right? Particularly if you're getting into software, you know, data management, you know, whether it be for government or municipalities or industrial for that matter. So it's interesting, you know, a good example, like, you know, CDM, you know, it spun off Trinex. We've seen Brown and Caldwell. They've got BC Blue, you know, but they're doing that sort of technology agnostic internally. And there are a number of other firms, Tetra Tech, obviously they've acquired some cybersecurity solutions providers as well. So there's still a lot of questions how to go about it. And I think also, you know, what, and I think I've brought this up either on this podcast or, but also on Dave McGimsey's Water Values podcast, possibly, in that people have looked at Innovyze. I had a conversation about Innovyze actually yesterday. You know, how did Innovyze come to be? And it was obviously birthed in some respects out of MWH. It took a long time, longer than, I mean, I think people even want to realize. It took a while. It was also partly by force of will by upper level management of Innovyze, sort of keeping that organization in a higher margin business, quite honestly, at arm's length. Innovyze was then moved over to Stantec when it was picked up, and then ultimately it went over to EQT, the private equity firm. And then obviously EQT seemed to have had a big win financially when it then sold it over to Autodesk over the last year or so. So that being said, my point is looking at how MWH and or to a lesser extent, Stantec managed Innovyze, people look at that. And I think other engineering firms look at that and want to see if they can do something similar. I'm not going to say it's easy, but nonetheless, interesting when it comes to business strategies. I think one thing it's also worth mentioning about Jacobs, not to be overlooked, is like you mentioned, it's, you know, prior to this or up to now, it's about a $14 billion business, which is pretty large for the its peer group of engineering firms. It's pretty significant. And its water footprint is also not small. It's one of the leading water players as far as total dollars at about $1.7 or so billion dollars in revenue. It's gotten to that point partly by acquiring, you know, organizations like CH2M or John Wood over the past couple of years. I mean, the other one was, the PA Consulting Group acquisition was not a small deal either. You know, I think that was several billion dollars as well. It was pretty significant. Now, obviously, represents going forward a pretty big chunk of the pie. I think, you know, I want to say, was that 8 or I think you mentioned it, 8 or 11% or so.
Yeah, 10 to 15%, somewhere in that range, I think. I don't have it right in front of me, but yeah, it's definitely, it's significant in terms of how they're approaching the water space for sure.
Yeah, so I guess the question is, you know, how much of this is kind of cleaning up some of the mess. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but that's just what happens with M&A, right? Particularly large deals. It's taken a little bit of time, but I'd say positively, when we look at it, it's, you know, they're tailwinds. I've made jokes about this, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. The big winners of climate change are the engineering firms, right? And so they're going to capitalize on, I mean, that's a sad way to put it. No one likes to hear it, but hey, that's the way it works.
Yeah, somebody has to do the work, right? And they're going to be the ones that are sort of at the trough benefiting from those big stimulus types of moves from the federal government.
Yeah. So, well, I don't want to keep you much longer, but because this has been great. I know it's sort of quick and dirty, and I thought this was interesting when we started talking about it the other day, but did we miss anything?
I think we've covered most of sort of the news of the last couple of weeks, but I mean, this is definitely, you know, a space that we look at pretty frequently, and we'll have updates as they arise for sure.
Yeah. So I look forward to this. I know as a result of this, I've been digging into some EPC or engineering company profiles that we've been working on as well. So, well, Greg, thanks a million for the time and insights. It's really helpful. And with that, I will set you free into the nice weather of Boston, and we will talk again soon.
All right. Game two. Looking forward to it.
All right. Cheers. Take care. All right. So there you have it. That was super helpful. Always like talking to Greg because he's got good authoritative insights on what's happening in the space. So before we sign off, if you're in Boston, or Toronto next month for ACE 23. Let us know. We can set up a meeting in Boston or in Toronto. Just give us a shout out at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. Please subscribe to the Future of Water podcast and give us a review. We need listeners. We need downloads. It helps us help you. And as always, if you have any topic ideas or thoughts on the podcast, give us a shout out. You know our email address. I don't need to say it again, I don't think. And lastly, tell a friend about it. It's always good to do that. If you have a colleague, friend, coworker, you name it, anybody with an email address or a Spotify or Apple or Google podcast account, share it with them. See if they like it. Might be interesting to them as well. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and take care.